in Johnston proper. You are live from Bath.
I am a working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am a working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the Lamb.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It is beautiful to be with you kind and lovely folk here today, and thank you for doing so.
I don't like that at all.
You feel like every generation gets their, like, theatrical Jesus? Like, it feels like there's a lot of them right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels
theatrical,
like...
Theatrical Jesus?
Yeah. Okay, just follow me here. So, like, when I was growing up, it was the King of Kings Jesus.
Okay.
And then, Caviezel showed up and did Passion of the Christ. Yep. And we're like, okay, that's, yeah, that's Jesus.
That's it.
And then Jonathan Rumi shows up for The Chosen.
I was just about
to say
that.
And I'm like, boy, this nails it. I mean,
it's the one.
Yeah. And then, but then, like, once the streaming platforms felt like the tide might be turning on some of this Jesus media, then now they're pumping more out. Like, it sounds like Caviezel coming back for extra Jesus for the Paul.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I think they're doing I don't know the name of the movie.
Yeah, The Passion of the Christ, the Lord Returns.
The also Passion of the Christ.
Wait, really?
Yeah. But I mean, he can't have a big part in the movie. It's just the resurrection takes. What are they gonna follow him around for 40 days? You know what I'm saying? Like,
The story is pretty quick into that part.
I mean, I bet
like
it's
Acts 1.
I bet it's got like an hour and a half worth of film, maybe just after like post ascension or pre ascension Jesus after the
ascension Jesus
resurrection,
yep. Right?
Yeah. Anyway, so now Caviezel come back for another round, and that's gonna be hard pressed because I thought Passion of Christ was all right. But Rumi, I mean, come on,
yeah,
you know, he's pretty solid. But then now they got a couple cartoons coming out, and then they want to do Life of Paul and like all this stuff. And I'm like, man,
which Jesus is yours, Mike?
I mean, I can't even remember.
Like
what the King of Kings Jesus looks like no more.
What is that, a movie that I'm not not remembering?
It was an Easter.
Okay. Got it.
It was an Easter movie.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I think I've settled on the Chosen, on the Rumi Jesus.
I do like The Chosen.
Yeah.
Like, some parts I'm like, ah, dang it, I didn't know this.
I mean,
like, this is theatrical, and I get why it exists. Like, I understand, but part of me is like, oh, come on, man.
I've had, like a couple of discussions with some dudes who are like, oh, The Chosen, it's this and that. And the other. I'm like, it has done more for, like, telling the story and being authentic to at least the words that Jesus spoke, right? Like, most of his dialogue, if it's not completely made up, or coming from the heart of, like, the Sermon on the Mount was it was word for word,
right,
and like and he uses a lot of, like, you can hear the Bible out of this man's mouth,
yeah,
like as that stuff happens. So like, I, if you want to find something wrong with it, I'm sure you can find something wrong with it. I'm sure they took a theatrical liberty here and there, but at the end of the day, it's God's words out into the world, which is more I can say than most people who have their talent up their butt. And they're like telling everybody how much they suck.
They have their talent up their butt.
Their thumb, where they're scrolling through TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Live from the Path. So who's your Jesus? Who's your theatrical Jesus?
I'd have to ask Ann Wilson.
I'll be honest, I think of the Beginner's Bible. Like, do you know that? Like, have you ever seen that? Like,
yeah, the kids one?
Yeah, the kids one?
Yeah.
That was the first Bible I read, and I think I was maybe 10 when I read that one. And, like, for some reason, as you said, theatrical Jesus, that's the one that kept popping into my head, was that Jesus.
Mm.
And I have not thought about that in 20 years.
Mm.
That's wild.
Yeah, that is wild.
Okay, well, that's my theatrical Jesus.
Every once in a while, the guy from the Jesus Christ Superstar movie shows up.
Hey, now, what's that movie about?
What, it's about Jesus.
Is it really? Because am I confusing it with another thing? I thought it was a Mormon thing.
I mean, the Book of Mormon?
Mormon Christ Superstar?
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I've never seen Jesus Christ Superstar, but I thought it was...
I got to be honest. Everybody said it was really offensive, and I thought, I don't know. I mean, there's parts of it that we can't get along with. It makes some insinuations that aren't any good.
Okay, all right.
But it nails the Pharisees, right? Does a good job with handling Pilate, and I didn't think it was actually all that sacrilegious.
Is it worth a view?
I mean, it's old. Like, it's from the 70s. And so...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Also, the guy from the Jesus in the London recording is the guy from, what is it, Smoke on the Water.
Deep Purple?
Deep Purple?
Yeah, Deep Purple. He's Ian McKellen. He's the lead singer from Deep Purple.
Yeah. He rocks hard.
But the guy who they got to do is Ted Neely, something Neely, who's the dude in the movie version is Wayfish.
Yeah.
I mean, dude could take off in a breeze. And like, I don't know. Gee, it's not like Jesus is got to be stacked. But I mean, this guy looks like Reaper Cheap would take him out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
A Narnia reference?
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this Lady Aslan coming out.
What? Okay.
You don't heard about that?
Okay. No, I've not heard about
that.
Okay.
We're going to get to it. Okay. All right. So anyway, here's what we're going to talk about on Life from the Path today. The theatrical Jesus, done. We're going to talk about, there was rumors going around this week, fairly well substantiated, that the upcoming Narnia movies being done by Greta Gerwig, who did the Barbie movie, and Little Women, a good rendition of Little Women, is doing the Narnia movies for Netflix. And the rumor was that she was going to cast a lady for Aslan, to voice Aslan.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so,
it's weird.
Isn't that just off the heels of them casting a lady to play Jesus in the new rendition of Jesus Christ Superstar?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The lady from Wicked.
Yeah.
It was played like at the Hollywood Bowl or whatever for a week, was playing Jesus for Jesus Christ Superstar. It's Meryl Streep is the lady who they got. So anyway, I don't hate this as much as I want to, but there's some very clear reasons to not do this.
And yeah.
So, anyway, I thought maybe we'd touch on that for a few minutes.
Sure.
But we were talking before the show about, was it, to see if I characterize it correctly, was it not like a biting, a rebuke from somebody who is, has no fruit themselves?
Yeah, it's just, there's stuff going on in my life that, you know, I've been putting myself out there a lot more in teaching. In the world, and I'm surprised from the sources of rebuke in which I've been receiving, and with no substantial substance to the rebuke that can tell me anything real, and I've tried to meet it with humility and go, all right, Jesus, like, I trust you, I trust the Holy Spirit within me, like, if this is brothers coming together and iron sharpens iron, like, sometimes that means I get sharpened. And like, I got to figure out what that looks like, and I need to know what it looks like to hit that. And so I'm prayerful about it. And it just, I don't think it's like a lack of humility in me that I keep going like, I don't know, friend. Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like what you're saying is something that I actually need to take in and change anything I'm on. Cause like there is stuff that I need to take in. Like, I'm confessing stuff in front of people, rightfully so, but like, this just doesn't feel like the thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to navigate those waters, and this is a relatively new space for me to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess more than just for the content, which is sometimes why I bring stuff up. I'm really kind of struggling with this.
Okay.
And so I'd appreciate some thoughts.
When do we stand for a rebuke? Got it. Also, we'll do some advice on Dear Life from the Path. Mike, did you check any of these out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You did not do that.
Not even a little bit.
Hey, there was,
fellas, I got to admit some.
Okay, let's have it.
Oh, boy.
I didn't look at the Dear Life from the Path like I just said I did.
Oh.
Hey, man, I really appreciate that you quickly like hit that up with some confession.
Yeah. I didn't, I mean, if you guys were to say something, I would burr up immediately and be like, how dare you? Show me the fruits in your life.
I appreciate the honesty. I'm like, shut up, friend. Show me them fruits, you dead stick on the ground. But, remnant.
But I'm full of the Spirit, and the Holy Spirit has leaded upon me that I can't. I told a lie earlier.
Hey, you turned that around pretty quick, though. I'm proud of you for that. That was relatively quick. You could have sat on that for a couple weeks and awkwardly come back to us and go, fellas, I lied to you weeks ago. You just did it immediately. I mean, mind you, we had already kind of called you out for it, but I appreciate that you brought it up like it was a thing that was completely organic in your heart.
Yeah.
Good for you, Mike.
Thank you.
All right. Anyway, we got that's it. I was also listening to one of the back shows, and there was a segment called For Us, For Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that only happened once, so it's not really a segment. It's more of like a vandalism.
It was a good idea, though. I thought it was going to catch on.
Okay. All right. We'll just keep an eye out for it.
What was it about?
It would basically, there's in a Bible verse, and how much should we believe it applies to the people that are in directly in the story, and then to what extent does it apply to other people around them? So Jeremiah 29:11.
I was just about to say Jeremiah 29:11, Philippians 4:13, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
Matthew 7:7.
God created the heavens and the earth. Is that for everybody? Or?
out of thousands of pieces of scripture, you go to the very beginning, which is obviously kind of a like cosmological statement meant for everybody, and you're like, yeah, did it mean for everybody when God said, "Let there be light"?
Sometimes I get irritated when I read Isaiah because I'm like, I know there's stuff for me in here, and the first half of it is like judgment against Israel or against Egypt. I'm like, I don't care. Give me the empowerment statements, Lord.
In which parts am I supposed to take that my enemies are, in fact, the dragon of the Nile? What does that mean for me?
Yeah.
Actually, this week it came across that, like, over the last few months, maybe 3 to 4 people, I've heard them refer to Psalm 139.
Oh boy!
And they're like, "Yeah, hey, this is great." And it's like, "Search me and know me, O Lord," and blah blah blah. And it's all this stuff that you find on the postcards and the doilies.
Yeah, totally.
And then, except for when he says, "Like, search me," it's right after he goes, "Like, I hate my enemies, like you hate them. I hate them too, Lord.
Yes,
search me. Like, check it out. Make sure you see the hate that I also have
for
your enemies."
Yep.
I'm like, everybody has skipped that part when they were quoting that one.
I'm navigating the waters of teaching people how to read scripture.
Yeah.
It's astonishing at how many times you can like blow people's minds by going, "Hey, the scripture that's your life verse thing. Did you read the rest of the chapter?"
Yeah, right.
And did you read the pieces before that?
Yeah.
And then they go, "Well, no, I really kind of just jammed in on that one." I'm like, okay, being a good Bible reader is going, what does this have to do with anything? And how am I making this now my thing that means everything to me? I'm like, good.
Uh-huh.
There's some stuff in there you can learn about the character of God. But maybe that doesn't mean that, like, this is the thing that you can stand on that is specifically for person X.
Yeah.
Like, you could read the rest of that chapter and recognize that what you just said is completely different from what they were talking about.
Yeah, totally.
It's wild.
It's people's ability to like, we say it like it's a pejorative, like, hey, they're cherry picking. People don't mean to. They
no.
just get like, so I think I've told this story, it might have been years ago, but I was given a sermon and it was about like sexual promiscuity
sure.
and like pornography and all kinds of things. And there was just one example where I had said something like you have to be careful who your kids are around and who they're having for influence.
Sure.
And it was kind of like a throwaway thing to the whole sermon.
Yeah.
After this was over, this lady came up to me. She's probably 70 and goes, "Hey, I like that whole sermon about watching who are protecting our kids and raising them right." I'm like, that wasn't what the sermon was about at
right.
all. Really.
You grabbed one statement.
Yeah, but like it's the thing that hit her. And she's
oh,
like,
totally.
Yeah. And like pornography just does not hit this woman at all. It's like I could be talking about camels for all she cares.
Sure, right.
So it's the thing that hits you, you know? And so in some ways you're like, if God takes a highlighter on a thing, that's cool. But like it's the minute – it's the minute so that, like, somebody had said to me a few days ago, they're like, you know, if I had a name, a title for the group I was going to do, I would call it Psalm 139 Ministries. I said, I feel like I'm going to have to establish the rest of Psalm 139 Ministries
yeah.
to follow you around.
Yeah, right, exactly. We got to figure out which part you're taking.
Yes, you take all the good stuff that you think is righteous, and then I'm just going to come around going, God, I hate who you hate. The end.
Search me and know my
Search
feelings.
Search me and know me. I do hate them.
I do hate them, Lord.
Know it for sure. All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. So this Aslan thing, this was one of the big concerns about having this Greta Gerwig do the Narnia movie. So she signed up. Netflix signed up for like a reboot of the Narnia films.
Oh, boy.
Films.
Okay. I didn't know that at all.
And they're probably going to start with the Magician's Nephew.
Okay.
So like they'll start at the beginning of Narnia.
Yep.
And so
I've read none of these.
Yeah. Mike, you
dude,
do.
It's
you
great.
Read them to your kids.
Magician's Nephew came from someone asking a question of C.S. Lewis.
No.
Like they were like, this doesn't make sense. And he was like, you're right. I'm going to write a whole book.
I'll take care of that.
I'll take care of that right now. It's freaking awesome.
For bedtime stories, we read the Surgeon General's warning on cigarettes.
Listen to me. I'm usually a poster boy for a traumatic childhood. I'll be honest with you. I never got may cause cancer in those who are pregnant.
Now go to bed.
Now go to bed and dream of the wispy things from a Marlboro 100.
Phyllis, yeah. I lied about that thing. But the cigarettes.
Are two for two on this coming back on lies. Good
we
job.
We did not do that.
All right, you're missing out. Okay,
those
so
kids couldn't
nephew.
Read. I had to read it to them. That's what I'm saying.
Magician's Nephew is the first one they're going for, which I appreciate.
Yeah. So anyway, the rumor this week was that Meryl Streep is in discussions to be the voice of Aslan.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some up in arms in the Narnia community.
Most I can imagine.
Jesus people. Yep. Because they're like, but it's supposed to be Jesus. And Jesus was a man. And so there's a bit of a hootenanny about this stuff.
Bit of a hootenanny.
Now, what's interesting about it is that, like, it's not like God is not without, like, feminine qualities.
Oh, of course, right, yeah.
And C.S. Lewis himself would have said, like, hey, I just don't go shake down your kids and tell them it's Jesus. Like, let it unravel
exactly.
to them.
Yeah.
And so, like, on its own... I mean, you can do what you want, I guess.
Sure, yep.
Like, the question is it like, is it of substance, for one? Like, is there something that deepens or otherwise enhances the story by some sort of gender swap in here? But there also is, they're like, well, it disconnects some of the imagery. You have to change a bunch of the titles, like he's a king of the blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But where they've honed in on, this is where the literary nerds have honed in. It's on the mane itself. They're like, they're like, people, like, for comfort and for stability, you've got characters
holding
who are grabbing
the mane,
burying themselves in the mane.
Totally.
And so, like, with a lady lion,
right,
it's absent that particular imagery.
Yes, right.
And same thing is, like, there's a, in one of the final book of the series, there's a guy who, like, pretends to be Aslan. It's like a bit of a revelation type of look.
Right, exactly.
And he's got this, like costume. Like he's put a lion skin over him. Mm-hmm. And again, the mane stands out. So they're like, oh, it must be.
It has to be.
It's got to be him. A regular lion lady, like, just doesn't have the same.
Sure.
It doesn't have the same vibe. And so anyway, it's an interesting. It's there's some people who've, like, done just a very basic. Hey, I hate this because Aslan is a dude and Jesus is a dude and C.S. Lewis is a dude. And these are all dudes. And why would you do it? But from, like, a
thorough argument,
from, like, a literary, like, how you think about, like, the image of this thing and some of the things that it communicates, it becomes much more difficult.
Right. There's, like, imagery of, like, if I remember correctly, the son of the emperor beyond the sea is one of the major pieces of like identification of Aslan in some of the books beyond Lion, Witch of the Wardrobe, where you get to a concept of, like, we're in a land that is off from, like, in the Caspian and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I would make that argument as well. And it's funny that you mentioned the main thing. I wasn't thinking about that, but that does completely land for me.
Yeah.
Of, yes. And I'd be interested, like, has there been anything about, like, what the motivation is for?
No.
I was wondering because, like, I can understand, Meryl Streep is an incredible actress. Like, she's a wonderful actress in many ways.
She
played.
She doesn't listen to the show.
I'm talking to the people who would agree with that statement. I'm not saying that she needs going to hear this and be like, wow, Troy's my biggest
fan. What is that complaint line?
What is that
Boova is
line?
Wonderful.
Boova is one. It wouldn't be the first person to text us and say Boova's the best.
Death Becomes Her is a great film.
But I just, I'd be interested, especially with the Barbie movie. Like, if I'm being totally honest about the director, I didn't know about Little Women, and I appreciate you
saying
that.
That was a great adaptation of Little Women.
That was a great book, or a great great film. I love that, actually. Yeah. This first time, I've only seen that Little Women, actually.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I worry about the concept of, like, a director who is incredibly politically charged with a lot of the themes of the Barbie movie and how much society has grabbed a hold of that, then getting this project and going, you know what?
Yeah.
Aslan's a lady.
Yeah.
Aslan's a lady.
Yeah.
And, like, so I'd like to know.
I find
what
this odd, like, commercially across the board, it's an odd move for Netflix, right? Like, there is where there it goes in big cycles, right? But and we're on an up cycle of, like, faith based, you know, movies, shows, books, whatever, right? Like, and like the Christian consumer is willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
And so to take a beloved thing and, like, screw with it seems so weird.
Snow White.
Okay, but this is what I'm saying. Along with the track record of like the even I thought I really liked the Lady Ghostbusters. I actually thought it was all right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it got critically panned and didn't turn like near the money they thought it was going to, because you took a beloved thing and you're like, it's a new twist on a beloved thing. People, it's beloved for a reason. Mm-hmm. If you'd have twisted it that way when it was original, it wouldn't have been beloved.
Right.
Yeah. And so like it's odd to go, there's this great thing, let's make it not like that.
Yeah, you know, Ghostbusters wasn't a testament to the patriarchy.
No.
Like, the original movie wasn't, oh, manpower, and that's the good things about it. It was just four very good actors
that were just great. To be honest with you, like I said, I liked the Lady Ghostbusters, but I thought it was all right.
Yeah.
But, like, it didn't commercially do what they thought it would. So, like, if it's a money-based thing, which Netflix is like, what, like, this is what they do. You know, so like to take, especially the way that the culture is moving and the faith-based consumer that is most likely to be instantly drawn to Narnia, if not other people too, but like it seems like an unnecessary gamble.
Yeah.
Like just a weird gamble.
You could even, especially like if you wanted to swap genders at different other characters in the books, like, and maybe you had a good reason for it. Okay, fine. But like, not only are people endeared to the character, and I mean, hearing Liam Neeson, like, He nails this thing, right? And so, and with a connection that people see as like, hey, this is communicating something about Jesus.
Totally.
To sever what feels like severing that, like, it's just dumb.
Yeah,
like,
it's just
commercially dumb.
Right. Apart whether it would be cool or whatever their thoughts are, like, it's just a weird gamble to take at this point in time with that particular piece of literature.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah. And I'm not angry if they went that route, but I am kind of bummed because, like, just think about a story you wanted to see or a play or whatever. And then someone did it and they just did it poorly. And you're like, oh, I liked the story. I wanted to see someone do something cool with it. And instead they did it terribly. You're like, oh, that's kind of a bummer.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like the Dune movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
I hate that friggin' movie.
Yeah. Mm.
I have the Funko Pops from it because I love Dune as a series. But that movie just destroyed that book.
Was that the source of the rebuke, is this Funko Pop thing?
What do you mean?
Because you have terrible Funko Pops?
No. What?
What?
No, I'm just saying, like, I have all
He's
the
Dune... He's got one of a Dune movie that was banned.
No, I have all of the Dune ones from the new movies and all the Dune books, and so I collect Funko Pops, so I even got the Dune Funko Pops from the crappy movie.
That's what I said.
Back in the 80s. Sorry, I wasn't understanding what you're saying then. Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
I got the crappy Dune ones because I was like, dang it, I freaking hate this movie, but it's still the Funko Pops from Dune.
You've got Funko FOMO.
I do. I really do. You should see my office. I have like 185 Funko Pops now. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
Okay.
Hey, Mike. I said I was sorry about how many Funko Pops I said, and that was a lie. That was a lie.
I'm going to need to see it as fruit in your life, not just words coming out of your mouth.
That's probably fair. All right. I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. That's it. If you have an opinion on that, I don't care. Hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd like to hear from you. Also, just know, if you watch the live broadcast, the title of the YouTube is going to say Aslan Interrupted. But just because after sitting here and talking about this, Aslan Wears Prada is a much better name.
It is absolutely a better name.
It is going to change. So don't be surprised if you see it on the podcast later on and the name of the show is Aslan Wears Prada, because that's so much better. I just didn't have time. I didn't know what we were going to talk about, so I have to guess.
Gosh.
Is that a Meryl Streep video?
Yeah, it's called It's the Devil Wears Prada. So I wonder if there are going to be people that are roughed out by you saying Aslan Wears Prada.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is content. SEO.
It's like the, what was that one? The Bog Witch, which looks like the bee.
Hey,
I thought
that was a sweet title.
Yeah. Hey, I have a broken foot, and I was given a poultice recently, like a potion, basically, to put on my foot to try and regenerate the bone.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
And I don't remember what's in it, but it's supposed to be good. And, like, I have people in my life who have used it, and it's been great for them.
Yeah.
And so I said something about it, and I joked with my wife, and I said, hey, can you apply the poultice, please? And she goes, what do you think I am, some kind of bog witch? Get your feet out of here. And I was like, I love this so much. I love this woman with all my heart. She's the friggin' best. I was like, no, you're not a bog witch, woman. Stop yelling those words at me. It was great. Also, I appreciate you going, hey, if you've got an opinion about this, I don't care. And then plugging in the actual phone number for our complaint line right after that. Well, if you have thoughts about this, I don't freaking care. 515-517-0085. Call or text anytime.
I found the phrase, I don't care about that, to be very strong and helpful to me. People starting a long
That's
story,
true.
I'm like, I don't care about that.
You've used it on me more than once, and it's completely deterred me from telling you a story that I probably shouldn't have in the first place. So, like, I have to say it does work.
That's how you shut down the boiler right there.
Okay. I don't care about that.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this rebuke that you're getting. Okay. So maybe I will start with the broad question, and I think maybe the details of your situation, maybe we'll see if they're necessary.
Yeah.
But, like, is it necessary or appropriate to stand a rebuke from a person who has no otherwise fruit of following Jesus in their life?
No.
No.
Yes.
You say yes.
Yeah, is it true?
Wait a minute. Are you saying stand? What do you mean, stand the rebuke?
Yeah, I mean, do you have to abide it? Do you have to take it in?
If they're calling something out that they're correct about the fact that, like, like, even if somebody doesn't have fruit in their life and they see me, like, treating my wife poorly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I misunderstood the question.
It could be a meth snorting wackadoo.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And if he's got a good line on you, if he's right,
if
then you'd be like,
well. If a dude that just got convicted for murder comes up to me and, like, saw me hit a man and goes, hey, man, you shouldn't have done that. Well, you're right. Crap. Yeah.
I mean,
though it came from the murderer, you fruitless schmuck, it's still true.
This one centered around spiritual things, Jesus things.
Yep.
The rebuke.
Yeah.
So it's got to pass a biblical sniff test.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally, yes.
Okay, yeah. So I think, like, but where we came to is slot number one is it true?
Yeah, that's the first thing that matters.
If it's true, like, because, and this is an important part, because most people pre-filter by, do I like this person and do they like me? But one of the primary ways of which you grow and become better as a person is be willing to stand a refinement from someone you do not like.
That's exactly why I'm asking the question in the first place and why I was willing to pray about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm not happy. Like, I'm flat out not happy with this situation. I'm pissed. I'm going to be real honest about it.
Yeah.
And it's freaking hurt my feelings. And it's, like, made me sick to my stomach in multiple situations. And it's freaking sucks.
Yep.
But, like, my immediate thing was, well, forget you. Like, forget you for this deal. Like, whatever. Yeah. And then I went, that's not right.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just go forget you. Like, I have to take a step back and go, one, it's fair. The inventory. Is it true? Well, okay. Got to figure that piece out. Yep. But then two, like, I want to be prayerful of, if I don't believe it's true, if Lord, you got my heart, and, like, soften it if you need to. If this is a situation where, like, your spirit is the one that like teaches me in this and it came through the mouth of that person.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm in for that because I'm in to be edified. Like, I'm in to look to be a better man on the other side of this.
Yeah, because the risk is you go, Lord, I'm willing to have you change me, but only through these people and in these circumstances.
And that, I'll be honest, that was my initial reaction.
Yeah.
I will own that. I immediately went, oh, forget that. Absolutely not.
Yep.
And then I went, crap, that's not right. Like, I do not want to be that guy because I've been that guy in the past.
Yeah.
And it's just not looked like Jesus. Like, I did not smell like Jesus when I was doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just, I could not do that again, which is why I even brought the question in the first place and why I was willing to be prayerful about it. And it freaking sucked.
But here's the risk, right? Is that, like, when you say, I'm willing to accept refinement from whatever avenue it comes, it does open you up to otherwise perhaps being directed by someone who doesn't actually care about you at all.
Yes.
Right? And so, like, there's a difference between someone who, like, who is the trigger for you to evaluate.
Uh-huh.
Hey, someone said a thing. Okay, if I took it back to Jesus, Jesus say? So, like, I took this person's thing that they said as a way for me to go, all right, Jesus, is that right?
Yep, right.
Because if that's right, then I want to change something. But what I do,
that's
what
a good line
you're not required to abide
is
someone's just, like, opinion on their life. Like, if someone who does not love me, I do not trust, is does not appear to be following Jesus, goes, dude, I think you're doing a suck job of following Jesus.
Sure, yeah.
Now, if you let that in and you internalize that and, like, you let that boil you up, like, that's a mistake because that person's not out for your good.
Yeah, right.
But if they said, dude, you shouldn't hold and harbor anger against your brother – well, that you could go, what do you think, Jesus? You're right. Yeah, he's totally right about that. Regardless of whether that guy loves you or not.
Sure, yeah.
And so, but that is the risk is often people are not very good at, like, opening up the gate for only the right parties.
Yeah.
And for only the right reasons.
Yeah.
The Amazon guy can come in.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Right. But, like, let's be careful that what I'm not saying is that just because someone has an opinion that, like, it can bounce off. But like, there's like a split second where you have to evaluate it. It's just actually, we were talking about the show when it comes to the emotions of people around you. Like, if you're able to kind of perceive how other people are feeling, like the worst thing you can do is take on other people's emotions and then suck them in on yourself and hold them in. It's going to eat you up. Like, so you have to, but they should trigger an action. A trigger an action is, hey, something's going on here. How do I react to it? Either I dismiss it. Or I reach out to them and I ask a question. Or in your case, like, hey, someone's got some sort of rebuke for me. I'm going to give it a quick evaluation. Is it true? Well, then I'm going to do something about it. Sure, if it's just an opinion, does this person love me? They don't. So I don't care about their opinion.
No, and that's totally fair. And I can appreciate that because that's it was something that I was kind of circling around, to be honest with you, was from the perspective of like, does this person strike me as someone that's been considerate of me in any way?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Like, not at all. Like, it's been like I've been used. And I was willing to be that because, like, it's fine. Like, I'm not hurt by that. It's like I'm just showing the love of Jesus. And, like, there's boundaries, but it hasn't been crossed yet. And so we'll figure that piece out. But, like, this piece was, like, person's never considered me once. Uh-huh. Like, never once went to me and, like, been like, hey, man, as a brother, I'd like to edify you in this situation. And, like, I believe this thing. They just freaking torn me down at almost every opportunity. And I'm like, ah, I don't know. But is it true? Is like, is there any part of this that's true? And I have to take a step back and be, you know, conscientious of that and take a look at that. But yeah, no, that's fair. Cause I don't feel love from this person at all.
Yeah.
Like I feel judged beyond measure and like they've left me in the dust and they're just like, well, since you haven't been able to serve me in this piece, you suck this way and now we're done talking and I think I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the heck, man?
Yeah.
Freaking hate this.
Yeah.
Gave me like, the thing that bothers me is the fact that, like, I'm a people person. Like, I enjoy people most of the time. And, like, I like being liked by people. That's the broken part of me. That's the honesty of that. But, like, even as I'm trying to turn my life around to be completely following Christ and, like, obedient to his peace and, like, I'm safe. I'm not worried about that at all. It still gets at my stomach sometimes where I'm like, dude, I hate when people hate me. Like, I freaking hate it. I hate when people just are like, man, that guy sucks, and I want to be done with that. Because nowadays, what I care about is, do they hate me and they don't see Jesus now because I represent Jesus? And now that dude just flat out might get a misrepresentation of the Father because of me.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I don't think, that's not on me, as long as I'm right in Jesus and obedient to him and stuff like that. It is on me if I'm flat out not following Jesus for me to go, oh, crap, that guy doesn't know Jesus because I did screw that up.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm just not trying to take on the weight of that when I am actively trying to follow Jesus and doing my best and confessing sins and walking daily with him and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I actually had, I think it's good to care about how you might have impacted somebody.
Yeah.
Like I was in a work thing last week and I said something to a guy, he'd started a conversation with me and I basically responded back to him and told him, the way you're talking about this is actually quite wrong. It's not right at all. And I explained to him why it wasn't right. And then, like, it probably ate at me for, like, 3 or 4 days. I'm like, I don't know. That seemed kind of – it wasn't harsh.
Sure, yeah.
It was true what I said to him. But, like, I thought, well, I don't know. Was I a jerk? I didn't mean to be a jerk, but I was a jerk. But I don't know this dude's last name. And like, I can't – but I'm trying to figure out ways to, like, reach out to the guy and, like, reconcile the thing.
Totally.
Like, hey, just so you know, I wasn't trying to be a jerk. I'm sorry if I came off that way. Because, you don't want – there's, you know, if you're leaving a bad impression and you're not intending to and you can fix it or whatever, like, or being humble in front of
someone,
seems great. So I actually think that's probably a good thing as long as it doesn't own you.
Yeah,
I guess.
Right. Yeah, and that's been one of the things that, like, I've been trying to set the boundaries on is, like – and exactly right. I would not want people to incorrectly look at themselves because of an interaction.
Yeah.
With me. Like I don't care that much about people's opinion of me from the perspective, as long as I'm right with Jesus. If you don't like me for certain things, okay. But like if somebody like really started hating themselves for something that I said, I'm like, oh crap, I got to fix that. And I may have represented a truth, but is there a way that I could have represented that was maybe more loving and less like light a fire to the situation and harshness? So.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense, and I appreciate that, and I think that's a fair judgment call on the situation. Is one, like, is it true? Take a step back and look in the situation, and like let that be a trigger for an evaluation. I think that's a good way to put it, and that's fair to take that step back. And then two, running it through: does this person love me, care about me, actually have like my betterment and my closeness with my Father in mind here with what they're saying? That's also important to kind of take back. And then three, you know, is this person in any any way for me to take in what they're saying, like that I would give their words weight for me to want to change something. Is one of the least important bits, actually.
Well, and it saves,
it's important, but it's one of the least important.
It saves a lot of time if that is not the situation, right? Like,
sure.
If people who have fruit in their life and they are, you know, have an active pursuit of God in the way that they're living, then your ears get to open a lot quicker.
Yeah,
and you get to go, okay. Yeah, I'm willing to take this. I might even just make this change right now.
Sure,
and I will pray on it, but I'm gonna go ahead and make this move.
Yeah, totally.
And, but like after, like I've, the reason I'm struggling with this a little bit is like, I don't know. Maybe I think that's a mature step, right? Like in between where you're at now and then a healthy following of Jesus Christ. I think in the middle, I think there's a lot of look. There's all kinds of people. In my life, I only let X amount speak into it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think there's a closeness of, look, I'm going to surround myself with people who are either where I want to be, have the relationship with God who I want to have, who are the ones that are teaching me scripture or like how to live as a Christian, all the stuff. Right. And like, I don't think it's as a risk as you are more mature in the way that your faith works. Right. But like, in the beginning and as you mature, I just don't have any problem with saying, look, you can speak out into everybody's life, but you need to limit who gets to speak in, right? Because that's how you get a bunch of really bad information, right? And so like, and without the ability to discern it, you know?
Yeah. That's why I think the first distinction is that like, you don't want to chase people's opinions around.
I mean, so the thing is like, it starts to get difficult because like the, is it true thing is we can pretty much agree on most things.
Sure.
In this room on what's true. That's not true for everybody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like opinions sometimes sound like truth, or even biblical principles sometimes sound like truth, which they're bent in a way, or they're curved in a way that isn't exactly how God prescribed it. You know what I'm saying? Like it gets to be more nuanced than that.
Sure. Yeah.
And so like, I was just listening to you guys talk about it. I'm like, dang, I've given this exact opposite advice 1,000 times. Where I'm like, look, don't take rebuke from anybody. Look, I don't use the word rebuke, right? But like, do not allow everyone to speak into your life, right? You, like, you need to allow people who are following Jesus to speak into your life, especially when it comes to things about following Jesus or like how you're going to interact with other people. God says, my principles are love me, love everybody else.
Sure.
But there are guidelines to that and principles to that and like, and nuances that until you are able to discern it, like, don't just start taking in whoever wants to speak into your life, even if it's a quippy Jesus sounding Instagram post, you know, like just stop for a minute. You know, don't just taking stuff in just because.
Well, and I think this is. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I was going to say. So I think maybe then is you're right. There's a level of discernment that says, am I capable of doing the triage?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, so if you're capable of doing the triage, then you should, you know, you can see the patient.
Right.
So that's fine. If you can't
at that mature level,
then hold it. And you got to have someone else help you triage.
Well, and that's what I was just about to say is like one of the places that like we're thankfully not left out in the dust on is we have community.
Yeah,
like this is one of the reasons that we have community. Like find, if you're a fella, find fellas that are following Jesus that just like Mike said, like are in a space where they're in a place where you want to be at someday and like have community with them and ask questions like, hey, this dude brought this to me recently. And like, what do you guys think about this piece? Can we come together as brothers on this? Ladies, you know, community coming together and being able to go, hey, in the realm of all of our hearts getting together and being able to read through scripture together and discern wisdom through the Holy Spirit and things like that as a group. This is something that has been presented to me recently. What do you guys think about that? Like, can you help me here? Because I don't feel necessarily capable of the triage in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to get to a spot where I'm correctly taking in edification and correctly taking in, you know, the iron sharpens iron perspective. I don't want a crappy iron coming in and trying to sharpen me when all it's going to do is dull us both.
Yeah, I have it's not the opposite problem, but it's going the other direction. I often have time triaging things with my wife, like the interactions between my spouse, because I not because she doesn't care about me, but because she does.
Yeah.
She loves me better than anybody I know. Then there are things that I like. I don't always have a good evaluation. Like I have to check. And so like those are actually like if you listen before, if you were here before or after the show. Like, if there's things I don't have a hard time sorting out true things I read somewhere on the net. Like, I'm pretty good at that kind of thing. But, yeah. like, when there's a bunch of emotional stuff involved related to that,
sure.
I actually generally need help yeah. sorting those types of things out because of the other things that came with it. So, anyway, so I think that's right. I think I do think you should still be open to changing based upon maybe it's not even untrustworthy parties, but like I mean I've watched or read articles or watched a sermon from a guy. I'm like, nope, this is all crappy.
Right,
I don't
yes.
agree with any of this.
Same.
But there was something in there that I'm like, yep.
Right, yeah.
That
90 minutes worth of content, I'm gonna take 15 seconds of it and go, okay.
Which to Mike's point though, it is a different skill of discernment to be sure. able to go to go like I can believe 5 seconds of this thing and then totally reject the other
sure.
like 10 minutes. Like not every, in fact, most people don't actually interact with stuff that way. Like they move in whole ideas. They're
yeah,
like,
right.
I can't put all this stuff together. I don't really understand all the nuance. So like, here's a guy, here's a book, here's an idea. I buy into the thing because it's hard to niche it out and recognize like where you're right, but you're not right here. And here's where you got it skewed.
Dang it.
And not everyone's good at that.
I don't know if I don't know if this is a generational thing or if it's just like I've matured to a point recently, but like I feel like I flipped that coin very recently.
Mm.
Like very within the last year of my life have been able to go like I trust anything that this person says. Like and if I'm wrong on it or if I don't agree with it, the problem is me.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the
yeah,
problem
yeah.
is in me and I need to change to this thought process. Mark Driscoll. Like, for a long time, I was like, I agree with everything he's ever said. And, like, he must be right, and I'm going to take in all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to talk about anything specific that he said that, like, it'll get into a long conversation. I'm sure people will want to jump in on it. But from the perspective of very recently, I've been able to, like, I was reading a book, and then, like, 4.5 hours in this book, something hit me, and I was like, nope, that's not right. Whereas before, I would have been like, this is a trusted author. I'm going to take in all of this stuff, and this is obviously true. I'm going to hit this piece. But
yeah.
now I'm like... I can, just because I disagree with this point, doesn't mean that I have to trash everything that I've heard up to this
That's right.
point.
That's right.
But it also doesn't mean that I have to completely change everything about my thought process because I must be wrong about this part then because they've been right about all these pieces. As I would hope that someone would do me the favor or the courtesy
yeah.
of going, Troy's maybe, or Boov has maybe said some dumb stuff before. Like he's maybe said something like, he says other good things. This is just something I disagree with.
Yeah.
Or vice versa of like, he's said awful things before. I can say a good thing and you go, I disagree with 80% of what he's said.
Yeah.
But like, he just said a nice little nugget of wisdom. Like it's an interesting thing that like very recently I hit where I can go, oh,
yeah,
I can actually take in information on a case by case basis and evaluate it and then determine whether or not it gets set in my file folders.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only biblical example I can think of where someone outside of like a follower of Yahweh was handing out rebukes and they were dead right was when Abraham kept trying to shill off his wife as his sister and like he got legit rebuked and
they were dead on.
They're
yeah.
like, yeah, that guy's definitely right. Abraham, you a punk.
Right. Yes, exactly. You sucked at this, Abraham.
Yeah,
what the heck?
And he was like, why didn't you just tell me? I wouldn't have done, look what you've done to my
right,
people.
Look what you've added to me.
Like that was a legit rebuke from an outside of Israelite. And I thought, yeah, that's legit.
I was, the Gibeonites are kind of like that. When Josh was like, taken over and they get, I don't know. It hits me that there might be a few other examples.
What a sad kind of embarrassment if the people of Yahweh get corrected by people who at that time were not of a family.
Well, right? I think that's the interesting point. I do actually think there are multiple places where Yahweh basically shames his people and their leaders.
Oh, totally.
By having wisdom come out of someone else's mouth.
Sometimes a donkey.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think there's a right in here somewhere.
Yeah,
and it's probably
right.
different for different types of folks. I would say, and maybe it's just as you mature, I think you got, and if you, where you can be discerning, you got to be willing to be able to learn.
Totally.
From other people.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just felt like it was a superpower that I unlocked, man.
Yeah.
I was so friggin' excited. I was just like, wait. I can actually take things like I don't have to just go, yes, this is all good. And therefore I have to change everything about me. Like it was kind of a confidence boost to go, hey, man, this dude is pretty smart.
Yeah.
But like I don't just hear everything he says and go, this is all good. I have actual wisdom within my own heart that goes, yeah, it's been great. Not that, though.
Yeah. It takes some getting over, because like I found that, and I think we talked about this on the show before, where like I'll read a commentary and I'm like, I'll disagree with it. I've got no grounding to disagree with it. I did not go to any school. I don't speak the languages natively. Like it's, but, and so it took some time because I was in the same boat. Like, especially like the thicker the thing, the smaller the type, you're like, this guy's really
The super thorough.
Smart in here. And it's weird. I never would have thought about it, actually. This is going to sound weird because it feels like I'm paying myself a compliment. I never would have said, hey, like, who do you know someone who's got, like, a gift of discernment?
Sure,
I wouldn't have thought, like, oh, that's me. But actually, I'm pretty good at this. This particular thing of being able to recognize, like, yep. No, narrowly.
Right. Carve that piece out.
Yeah, or yes, narrowly.
Sure.
And why? And then why these things go together and why that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a level of self-confidence, but it's not really. It's actually more of a recognition of the fallibility of people around you.
Totally.
I'm more likely to go, well, this is not a perfect guy. I really like what he's got going on here, but like, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
He also spoke too harshly to his wife yesterday and, you know, failed to follow Jesus appropriately in large swaths in his 20s. Like, they're just humans.
Yeah,
and so
right,
they're
exactly.
doing their best the way I'm doing my best. And they're not inherently going to get everything right all the
right.
time.
Totally fair.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. All right. One of the other things we want to talk about before we give out some advice on your Life from the Path is I almost think that we have talked about this before, but maybe it was just in the room and not on the mic. But it was about the shape of recovery ministries tending to be from more charismatic churches mm-hmm. or ministries and stuff.
Sure.
I don't want to. This is stereotypical, but like it's that way for a reason. But like a lot of the recovery ministries tend to come from some like charismatic belief backgrounds, pro-life type of stuff, and women's stuff like often comes from Catholics. Mm-hmm. Catholic churches have got that. Baptists are hitting up the missions, mm-hmm. like just to keep you off the street for 20 days type of situations, food kitchens, this kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
And yes, I get it. Like a lot of different churches do a lot of different things. But it's interesting, though, is like in what way or is there a relationship between some of the core beliefs of some of these denominations of churches and why they end up doing certain types of things? But we were talking specifically about the recovery ministries. And Mike, was it you? Like the question is because of a charismatic background, those types of beliefs do tend to like look for experiences related mm-hmm. to following Jesus or the presence of the Spirit and that kind of thing, which in some ways is an emotional high. And so, are there some risks in that in coming from what is a physical high and trying to get off that, and then what feels like maybe chasing it with emotional/spiritual highs that I don't know that maybe can't be maintained or aren't like the same thing as following just flat out obedience
sure,
to Jesus.
Yeah.
Am I framing that right?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. I could keep coming up with the wrong word, but like right off the crack, if you've had an experience with God, it's amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
And like no one is saying, hey, you should not have those.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or we shouldn't be excited when those happen. I think the issue is when you start pairing like an experiential, it just sounds bad. When you pair a walk with Christ that is based solely on experience.
On events.
Yeah.
And
right.
we're going to call them like mountaintop events. Right.
Sure,
like.
Yeah.
Because, like, I can experience God's love and presence just reading scripture.
Yes.
Right? And, like, it feels like a warm blanket, not like a birthday party. Right? There's two different experiences there,
oh,
you
totally,
know?
Yes.
And both have a presence of a loving Father, right? One of them has a lot of excitement and a lot of moving parts and a lot of emotion. And one of them just feels like I am loved and I feel comfortable where I'm at. And I feel like I'm known and hugged by my Father.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, those are all equally valid experiences with the Holy Spirit and with God. And like, I think most Christians have those, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the warm blanket isn't the same as if you feel like God just revealed a thing to you,
sure.
you know, but like some of the more charismatic aspects of the Christian faith, like they almost point it as if we're chasing like the birthday parties around, mm-hmm. like we got to feel like we got to be dragged to the ground crying. We got to be so overwhelmed with emotion in a way that like we just can't take it anymore. Yeah. You know, like all these things. And like, I did not grow up that way. So I don't, that's not been my faith background. So I don't have a whole lot of experiences in that way. But what it feels like is you're trading one addiction for another, right? We're not saying, hey, be, this is where the word I'm having a hard time grabbing, right? But being okay with your circumstances,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not saying like, be comforted and known that like, it's all going to point back to Jesus's work on the cross. That's where the foundation of our faith is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's going to vary in the way that it hits you depending on some life circumstances and what's going on with you. But like on a good majority of the days, it's just a solid foundation to walk through, right? It doesn't feel like this big thing, right? But
sure.
like if every, like when you are trying to, you know, come off addictions and like we're going to put them all in there, even the ones that are legal that are harming
you. Totally, yeah, totally. Yes.
Right. Like we're just talking about addictions in general, yep. not the ones that get you busted.
Getting
right?
comfort in the wrong places.
And so like you're it's exactly right. You're trying to fill in the comfort in the wrong places. And so like the warm blanket feels like the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Right. That feels like comfort in all the right places and to give you strength and peace and freedom in mm-hmm. the things that you're walking through, the day to day stuff. Right. But like, there's not a life to be lived outside of recovery ministry that has you like bombing to the ground every day, right? Like you have
right.
to, like people pay you to come to work 8 to 5. You can't just be passing out in the bathroom overcome by the Holy Spirit, right? Like there's, you know what I'm saying? Like almost everybody's life outside of that particular setup, right? Like the counselor gets to do it, whoever runs the place, the pastor there, they get to be involved in this stuff all the time. But like there's 99.993% of the world of the people who love Jesus that are just you also have to live a regular life.
Yeah.
You also right. have to have sheep in and sheep out. Even yeah. if you take Moses as a classic example, right? Like that guy is just out there after he leaves Egypt, he's just out there running sheep. He don't hear from God for like 40 years. He's an old man. There was 40 years of nothing going on for him except for sheep in, sheep out, sheep in, sheep out. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden a burning bush shows up, right? And then he has like this very unique relationship with God as he continues on, mm-hmm. right? But there's still giant portions of your life where like if you expect every day to be a burning bush, you also expect every day to have a high to it.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
To have a needle associated with it or 17,000 cigarettes or whatever else you're trying to bury everything
yeah,
with,
right.
right? And so like the burning bush isn't the regular. That's what makes it like this huge turning point, right? But if like you're like, hey, we have to experience this every day and every day and every day. Like I just don't see a scriptural backing for that. And also I don't find it sustainable, right? Like people get out and they get through recovery and then like they're not being torn in all like all these crazy event driven, mm-hmm. you know, ways. And then you're like, well, my faith is failing me because your entire faith structure was based on these birthday parties.
Right. Yes.
And like the warm blanket's the thing that like gets you,
yeah,
that gets right. you through the day to day. And so like, I don't know, I was just talking to a guy earlier this week or last week or something. We were just talking about recovery ministry and like, I feel bad even speaking into it because I don't run a recovery ministry. And I think people who are doing the work that God called them to do in this area, it's an amazing thing that you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And because it's like running I don't want to pair it directly to youth group, but like you almost barely never see the fruits. More people leave than stay.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Way more people yep. fail than succeed, you know? And so like you get like these little glimmers of hope yeah. of the work that you're doing is actually making an impact, but most of the time it's not just a guy leaves. He gives you the finger on the way
yeah,
out
right.
or tears the place
yep.
up, or you have to see him sleeping in the same car, not 3 days mm-hmm. later mm-hmm. after you were providing him 3 hots and a cot mm-hmm. and love.
Right.
Right. And then like, you're like, he chose to come out and feed this. And so like, it has to be so disheartening time after time, after time and time. So like that is a blanket, you know what I'm saying? Like that's sustained by the
yeah.
work and power of the Holy Spirit that people even stay in that ministry. Because like if it was just a personal relationship, you'd be like, screw it. Like, I don't know how many times I have to keep taking people back, keep trying to teach them things, and they keep giving me the finger and leaving. So like,
right, yes,
whatever, I'm out, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, that's still all God's presence stuff. But like, I just think that sometimes it gets hyper-focused on experience, like big birthday party experiences with God, and it misses out on the character of a long, patient, loving father that like is just as likely to put you to bed, read you a story, make sure you have lunch,
yeah,
than he is to take you to the ball game and order 7 hot dogs. You know what I'm saying? Like, all those are encompass the full relationship of God. But, like, it's not like having a, I don't know, like a, like your mom's boyfriend that's trying to win your favor. It keeps taking you out places, and you're like, what is this? You know what I'm saying? And so, like,
I know what you're about, Dubs.
Yeah, stop.
Get out of here.
There's no way we're eating,
I'm a real dad,
Burger
Dub.
King 85 times, you know? So, anyway, it was just something we were talking about. And maybe it's just something to be cognizant of and, mm-hmm. and you know, just know, like, when we're trying to, I do like the recovery ministries that are like, look, we don't do any addictions here. You know what I'm saying? We're not just going to let, you know, smoke and go, right? Because it's still a thing that owns you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, we're not, like, the world categorizes them as good, better, best, you know, as the ones that you can keep. Just like the world does. We're like, hey, we're fine if you're addicted to coffee.
Uh-huh.
You know, expensive coffees every day. We're like, yeah, that's fine. It's not fine.
Right.
Something owns you. Yeah. That's not fine.
Yeah. If you're not on heroin, but you're addicted to pornography, oh, that's okay.
Yeah, that's you're not hurting anybody. Fine. Yes, you
right.
are.
Yeah,
it's
right,
communal
exactly.
sin.
Yes.
You're
yeah.
dumping it out into the world,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and you're
right.
separating yourself from God. It's all bad.
Now, here's what's interesting, because I think you're right. I think it's something to be mindful of. One of the questions, though, is like, why, what is perhaps unique around these types of ministries for charismatic backgrounds? And I think some of the ways of which it is often more like, I just, again, Baptist background, like, we would just follow you around going, look, you just suck,
yeah,
and you should not sin today. Otherwise God's going to be mad.
Yeah.
And, you're going to do drugs. That's a sin.
Yeah.
You're going to think about the porns.
Sin.
That's a sin.
Sin. Yeah.
Stop it. Repent. Tell everybody, do it again. And so I'm not, maybe the Baptists aren't made for this type of thing, but because like,
yeah, that, I tell you, that brand of thinking digs its own hole too.
Right. It does something different. So like the, a more like, I don't want to say spirit led because like, I mean, these are all these situations can be that.
Yeah. Right.
But a more charismatic background, one has a recognition that like sometimes it's behavior. It is behavior modification to a certain mm-hmm. extent and restraint. But like some of the stuff is actually spiritual because of situations you put yourself
totally,
in,
yes.
backgrounds, drugs.
Yep.
And like you ain't going to find a Baptist in the world who's going to go, oh, I think there might be some demons. Like you might have opened yourself up to a spiritual influence of which we like we're trying to rethink. You've already done it. And so
yep.
now the question is it like, is there something spiritual going on
sure.
here? There's an openness to that. I think secondly, like there is a There's a willingness to kind of embrace, like to your point, a holistic view of like, don't just keep the needle out of your arm. You need to refocus. Like Jesus can like legitimately solve all these problems. This
totally.
Is why Celebrate Recovery works this way. So do like most of the addiction types of places. Like if they're thinking about it from a Jesus background, they're not just going, look, we're trying to detox you. They're like, we're trying to reframe.
Oh, yeah.
Completely around mm-hmm. it, where again, like you know, the Catholics and the but, like, all the more your more mainline folks are just for the most part helping you to stop doing a thing,
right? Yeah,
and so anyway, I say that because like there is something about that faith tradition that I think is actually helpful in some of the recovery ministries, mm-hmm. Because you actually are going from like what feels like a high to not just like a prison.
Right.
But to something that says, how do we redirect that?
Yeah.
But if it doesn't sit in the right balance, if you end up chasing that thing, you're right. Like as soon as – what is the – there's somewhere local that has this that like, I don't know, whoever – of the people that go into the program, 50% make it to like the halfway house. And then 50% of people of that get out of the halfway house.
Uh-huh.
And then another 50% make it the year on their own after that. So
sure.
like by the time you're done, out of 100 guys, you've got – you know, 20 left
yeah.
or something who's made it through. And you're like, well, I don't love those odds. So like something is not transitioning quite right. And I think it's
yeah.
probably because you go and like you found something like you sucked the stuff out that was controlling you and you put the spirit and Jesus stuff back in to control you. But then like when you had to go back and forth to work and you had to like fold
yeah.
your towels and like sit with yourself with only basic cable available, like there, you couldn't gin up these experiences anymore.
Yeah, right.
And the question is it like, is Jesus still with me as I sit in those? And if you're not prepared and you're not embracing life like that with that comfort, you're going to end up chasing the feeling somewhere or another.
Yeah. And actually, if there is, if that is supposed to be the experience, there's a lot of the Bible that's hard to reckon with.
Oh, totally. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
there's a lot of lament
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of folks going, God, where are you?
Yeah, totally.
You know, like how long will your hands stay? What is the holdup? in you showing up and like, come protect me already, or come fight my enemies, or all the things that we're leaning on, you know, but like they're written down and they're prayed in a way that's like, it's because he hasn't shown up yet. Mm-hmm. Right. And he has not done the thing. Yeah. And so like
still in exile,
because he will say no, and he will plan things out, and he will do things in their right time. And so like, sometimes that like, it sucks. Cause it's hard to frame that. Like, I've prayed for so many things, especially in the last couple, 3 years, where I'm like, God, I need you to show up. And he's like, no. And he just doesn't do it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, it's not like it was a time-based thing. Like, he needed to show up in X amount of time, or the thing that I'm praying on could not come to fruition. And that's the way it went, mm-hmm. you know? And not to say that he won't redeem later or do whatever is in his good, righteous, loving heart to do. He's got the right tick of it. I do not. I'm fine with that. But like, still, I was just listening to a guy today that I can't remember, he showed up and he basically said like, 40 years of following Jesus. I'm tithe every week. I read my Bible. I go to church all the time. Did you see this guy?
Yeah.
You know, and then he's like, now I got cancer, and now, you know, blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, I don't know about this Christianity thing. Seems like a complete waste to me.
Yeah. Sure. Today I saw the same thing. Yeah. Wild.
And so like, but the thing is, like, the first thing I thought of when the guy said, he goes, none of my prayers were answered, none of my this. And I thought, what were you praying for exactly? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm interested to hear what you were praying for.
Yeah.
And he listed off a bunch of religious markers, check boxes, right? Like, these are the things that I do. God owes me X, you know?
Yeah.
And like, normally what I see is done with the right heart posture. Actually, all those things put you in an experience with God in a way, and you will see him moving. You will see his no, and you will also see his yes, you know? But like, if you've seen none of that, then I feel like your heart was not sticking where it should have been. But right. like, it, in either case, like, I think there's just, there tends to be an inherent danger in believing that you're going to tell God when to show up and like what experience for you to have, you know, and instead of going like, God's going to do those things when he needs to do those things. He's going to do them in his good and right timing. And like, it almost feels like you're trying to puppet him around.
Yeah.
Like if somebody didn't like speak some wild tongues today or flip out on the hallway, then it was a fail of a day because the Holy Spirit didn't show up. Well, that's happening all those things are not happening at 85% of the churches out there. So like, are all those folks out? You know what I'm saying? Does the Holy Spirit not visit that place? That seems weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also, like I said, I don't come from a charismatic background. I'm sure there's a lot of stereotypical things in there that I might be saying that I might not understand quite right. But overall, especially when it comes to addiction ministry, I've only just seen this in a couple folks around me, which is the reason it came up.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that experience too. And it's less some of the stereotypical stuff, but it's more like the constant description of being like overwhelmed with something.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? And Bhuva, I want you to, I think you'll take this the right way.
Yeah, please.
But like, it's, there's a maturity in not feeling like you're moving from mountaintop to mountaintop, not just in those experiences, but like, hey, this is, me and God have never been in this place before. Mm-hmm. And like, I say that because like, I mean, just thinking about a decade ago, you know, every 6 weeks, Boo was in here and he's like, we just had a revelation, the Lord and I, and like something else has happened. And like, it felt like really good, like progress types of things, but like it came from a need to say, we've arrived, we've got it. Like we finally got over a hump.
It was an incessant need to try and pretend like I was okay.
Yeah.
And it was me manufacturing events-based Christianity.
Yep.
And it felt like a failure if I was not riding a high.
Yeah.
I think that's where I've found closeness kind of in this conversation has been seeing what it looks like for events-based high inducing relationship with the Lord just completely fail the majority,
mm-hmm.
because the second that they don't feel like they're at the top of the mountaintop, the only other option is the depth of the valley.
Right.
And like, it's like, no, there's a middle ground. Mm-hmm. And like, I could appreciate how long I rode the roller coaster of like, I was at the top and I'd go to a conference or something, or I'd go and I'd, you know, be at a concert, or there was some kind of event that was so big to me or something was crazy. And then the second that went away, it's like, oh no, I'm losing it. And it would feel like you're going plummeting. And so you start to manufacture it. you start to go, okay, there's only truth in the height.
Yeah.
Like, there's only truth in this thing. But, like, where you get to a point where it's a fantastic life to live is, like, if I lose my job tomorrow, God's still good. Like, if our adoption goes through tomorrow, God's still good. If I wait 5 years till we have a baby in our arms, God's still good. And, like, to get off of the roller coaster and start just freaking riding, like, I'm just going to drive this highway. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, and yeah, it veers up sometimes and it veers down sometimes. But it's not like these giant monumental swoops of, yeah. Of like, this experience with the Spirit. Now it's just like, no, I just live with Him. Like, I'm just with Him all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, my being is with Him. And sometimes worship music makes me cry my eyes out. But sometimes it's like, yeah, just today was Tuesday, and it was great, Lord. Yeah. Thank You for the time. And so I'm much less likely to be failed, one, by myself mainly, but, like, also by like, not having the experience of other people. And I think that's where mm-hmm. I have found this thing to be a bit suspect has been in the recovery ministries that I've seen, if you're not way out there and loud and big and like, look at this and posting all the videos and saying all the things and everything's on fire all the time, like, it's problematic. And mm-hmm. then if people don't feel that, they feel like they failed and they leave mm-hmm. completely. But then also, if you finally get to a point where you're tired of having to manufacture this giant bonfire that's happening all the time because it was on you in the first place in most of the situation and fabricated, you then plummet. And so that we get people that are just like out there and are proclaiming all of these things for people and saying, like, this is what your life should look like. This is what I've done. This is how this looks. And it just gets like you pull back one layer of the facade and then it's like, oh, no. Oh, crap. That's just another recovering addict that's doing their best to, like, not get high. Mm-hmm. But they're just trying to make me not be able to see all the crap that they don't want me to see.
Yeah.
Like, all I'm doing is pulling back one layer of this curtain, and then I can see a scared little boy sitting there and go, oh, man, you are so terrified of the fire being put out that you have to be a bonfire, and you're not okay with being a campfire. Yeah. Like, you're not okay with just lighting up a little bit and being like, all right. Right. I'm on fire for the Lord, but it's a slow burn.
Yeah.
It's steady.
And that's actually, if you think about when James is talking about not being a double-minded man.
Totally.
Like, have we created scenarios of which people don't have a choice but to be double-minded?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, completely. Yes, exactly. And it's like, I've seen so many people, like, explode in a good way and then fizzle out so quickly because there was no more accelerant. Like, there's nothing to keep the fire going. The oxygen was gone. It's snuffed out. And then they look like a failure. And then the people that are on their way up to that high then get scared because they're like, oh, no, I was keeping my eyes on that dude. I was keeping my eyes on what this looked like. And the second that sin starts to get seen or it starts to get a little bit shaky and everybody just bails, and then the whole friggin' ministry just plummets. Mm-hmm. And then everything that they were preaching about, all the pieces that were true about the gospel and the nature of Jesus as the Christ, right? Like, you miss out on the honesty of the situation because you were so excited about the fireworks show that you were there for that the second you stopped seeing fireworks exploding, you gave up on the whole thing entirely.
And that goes back to our nuance conversation. Like,
yes.
It was like, you could God have been actively working in someone's life? Of course they could. Because they had a regression in their recovery.
Uh-huh.
Does that make anything they said not true? No.
No, of course not.
Not necessarily.
Right.
And so, but because you've got room full of what is in the process of sanctification, like, it's very difficult not to just go, no, not only was that not true because that person failed,
right.
Whatever they were pointing back to may also not be true. God right. doesn't really yep. do this. And can I believe, remember we were talking about, was this a few weeks ago we were talking about, it's hard to take in people who seem to have like a prophet type of stuff in their lives, or even people who are like gifted teachers or
sure,
something.
Yeah.
And like, you just kind of presume that because they have one dominant and very kind of impressive fruit of the Spirit, you're like, they must be doing great.
Yep.
But like, I know all kinds of people who are like, that person hears directly from the Lord. But That behavior's weird.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's not right. That has room to grow over there. And so, like, it's there's just a nuance to that.
Totally.
And it's just so easy, though, to create the waves, and then people just stop believing in the tide. Well, there must not be a tide maker.
Right. And having the people that are in charge of these kind of ministries be in such a state where they are humbly following the Lord is so incredibly important. Because, like, as you look good from the outside, if all you talk about is how great God is because of how great you're doing, which is true, God is great in that situation. That is the constant and true statement.
Yep.
However, the second that your facade starts to crack a little bit, it all goes by the wayside.
Yeah.
But if there's humble leadership that goes, don't trust me, trust God in me. Don't trust who I am and what I do. I suck. I'm fallen and broken, but I'm restored by the living Christ.
Right.
Like, that's what this looks like.
Yeah.
And we get to this point where what happens is you get these leaders that are so gung-ho about, maybe very recently they were in the same spot as a lot of the people that they're trying to minister to or lead. They are so scared to look that way anymore that it'll become a facade and fake and broken, and you can see through it in a heartbeat.
Which is true for, like, I mean, pastors and all leaders.
Exactly.
So
and I'm... Yeah, not just recovery minute. That is every single situation where man is involved.
Yeah.
Humans are involved. If there is not humans with humility pointing back to God in everything and confessing sins as they happen, because if somebody looks perfect, I promise you there's stuff they're not saying.
Yeah.
They're not saying. And that doesn't mean that every pastor has to come to the pulpit every Sunday and go, all right, guys, here's the inventory of my sins this last week.
Yeah.
However, humility in leadership is one of the biggest things. Like, I'm not the shepherd in this. I'm just a sheep that's been with the shepherd a little longer, and I know what it feels like to be very close to him. So until you can see him as your shepherd, just stick close to me. But never think to yourself that I'm the shepherd in this. I'm just another sheep.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging on with us today. Maybe you got thoughts on that. Maybe you're angry. Maybe you're an angry person. Don't be angry at your brothers. Accept the rebuke from here, from the voice in your radio. This has been saying, don't be angry. But maybe we've got something wrong and you want to help us to see that. We're willing to hear it from you. So hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. And you just want to do hashtag Boova so he knows it's you, that you're it's him that you're mad at. That makes sense to me. Helps me sort out the messages. That's hashtag Boova, 515-517-0085. Call or text Live from the Path. All right, Mike, let's give some quick advice.
Dear Live from the Path, I fell in love with my best friend. When I told her 10 years ago, she distanced herself. We were still friends, but she went on making bad choices in her relationships, and I never found anyone who could compare to her. We reconnected recently and have once again become very close. I still love her, and I always will. She doesn't share the same feelings I have, and while I want to ask her why, I haven't asked because I don't want to lose her again. Am I wrong for settling for our amazing friendship? How can I convince her that we could be much more than just each other's best friend without losing her?
Okay, you're not settling.
Stop it. You have a good friend. You have an amazing friend.
This is like, okay, yeah, so again, you can't frame it as you've settled for something when the reality that you want to be true is not
it's
true.
It's just not the truth, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't, like, you give up until you force it to happen, but that's under the impression that, like, just a little bit more effort on your part and maybe she will like you. That's not your situation, friend.
I also refuse to take in the situation where a fella's like, she just doesn't understand the logical path that is, I'm the best for her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfect for her. And she's just making, when I hear she continued making bad choices, meaning not choosing
me. Yep.
Like, come on, man. Like, oh, gosh.
Sounds like it was literally written by Forrest Gump.
Jenny. I wish Jenny would love me.
But she did. Love him.
She did love him from afar and often in rough situations. She'll come back to you, Forrest. If you're Forrest and she's meant to be your Jenny, the writers will make it so that she's your Jenny.
Yeah, I don't.
Honestly,
you might be unhealthy, though.
Yeah, I think that you should take a step back and recognize that, like, if in 10 years you've probably either not had a single relationship or you've had a bunch of bad ones in which you've been broken up over and over again, and you just now feel like you're getting back to a space, oh, now Sandra's back in my life, and maybe I can convince her if I can just show her that I'm the best. No, dude, you need to take a step back and recognize that, like, there's a reason that you are not with somebody after 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just, this is very immature behavior. Just think back to high school. Like, you just tell me You didn't. There's not some lady when you're in like late junior high, early high school that you got your eyes on and you're just like, this is the one. This is the one for me. Mm-hmm. And like, it's not. You're not married to this person. This isn't the person that you're with. As a matter of fact, the next year, maybe 2 years down the line, or you switched, you got a job or went to a college or something. And you know what? There's some sort of lady to Google eye there too. Like, mm-hmm. they're everywhere. Yeah. And so how easy it is to jump from some level of like attraction slash infatuation. Like, it sounds like you just never left junior high.
Yes, right, exactly.
In this situation.
Yeah. The best thing you can do for yourself is just work on you. And if you get to a point where you are right for this woman, great. And maybe, I hope for you, that you heal so much that you realize she's not even right for you anymore. And then you find the right person.
It's a good point, though, that sounds like she's aware. And so mm-hmm. if she thought this was the right path for her, she knows where to come.
Yeah,
she knows
right.
where to come knocking.
Right. 10 years ago, she found out about it. Now she's back. She's not like, I wonder if he doesn't have feelings for me anymore.
It is Forrest Gump.
I wonder if like she figures that this has played itself out and it was just an immature love back in the day. So 10 years later, she feels safe to be his friend again.
Nope.
And he's still
junior high. Jack is holding
on. Or she's had 10 years of rough situations and this is the most recent iteration of her not like actually trying to heal herself and find good relationships. Mm,
yeah.
She's coming back to bestie after 10 years.
Yeah. I don't actually know if it's probably a good idea for you guys to be friends, honestly.
Yeah. You should pursue the Lord.
Yeah, I don't know if this relationship is, like, you're both using it for different reasons.
Yeah.
You are hoping that it's going to turn into something, but, like, that's literally like being in relationship with somebody and being like, sticking with it because you want to know the future version of them. And that's not a friendship, right? Like, you're an artist trying to paint a painting.
Hopefully our paths will cross someday and we'll be in better spaces.
Yeah, hopefully if just I'll wear you down and then I'll love you or you'll love me or whatever. And so, like, it's saying that, like, you continue to be in relationship with her because you're hoping that it will come to more, which means that her current friendship with you is not enough for you, mm-hmm. which means, like, to be fair, you're shortchanging her. Whether I think that she is using you for a good reason or not is not really the point. But, like, if we're talking to you, then, that's not a healthy place to be for her or you. Yeah. You're doing her a disservice as well.
Yeah, the Hollywood storyline that you're hoping is true is going to be disastrous for you.
Yeah, and you know what you should do in your free time is stop watching movies and books and then idealizing relationships as if they were not pinned and fictionalized by whatever entertainment you saw.
Yeah.
You're right. These things are entertaining to you because they're not the norm.
Right.
Right? That's why people are like, wow, can you imagine what happened on that movie? That was crazy. Right.
Yeah. Hollywood's never put out a movie of a normal marriage that's healthy.
Yeah. I like that. That's a boring movie. Nobody wants to watch it.
Honey, we need to have a budget conversation. I'm excited about that because I know you love me and I love you. Credits.
See ya. All right. Secular says, when a woman distances herself after a man tells her he wants romantic involvement, it usually means she is not physically attracted to him. It doesn't mean she doesn't, quotes, like him or that they don't have much in common. However, it does mean that if you want more out of a relationship, you will have to look elsewhere to find it.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
All right, last one. Ready?
Yep.
Dear Live from the Path, my little sister is getting married, and our family is thrilled for her. Mm-hmm. She's having a small wedding and has chosen not to have a bridal party.
Okay.
At first, I was sad because she was the maid of honor in my wedding, but I respect her and her fiancé's decision.
Uh-huh.
My quandary is that I joked that I'm off the hook from writing a speech since I'm not the maid of honor, but she still wants me to write a speech and give a toast. I don't want to.
Wait, where?
At the wedding.
At the wedding.
At the reception.
Oh, okay, yeah. Why is that? Isn't that another normal place to do it?
We've never been to weddings?
This woman is saying that she's not the matron of honor in her sister's wedding, and that would have been the only situation in which she felt like she needed to give a speech.
Oh, okay.
And sister's coming back and saying, I don't want you to be the maid of honor, not because I don't, or I have another maid of honor, but because I have no bridal party.
Yeah.
Oh, and sister is like, how dare you come to me and ask me to give a speech when you won't give me the title of matron of honor.
Okay, I got it.
Or maid of honor.
I got it.
It seems like she wants to have her wedding cake and eat it too. Your thoughts?
You are ridiculous.
Give the speech. What's the
matter? I can't imagine how inconsiderate of a sibling you are. I wish she would. I'm going to get mean. I'm sorry. I think you should take a step back and realize
you should drink bug water.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, if you're this inconsiderate about her asking you to give a speech, but you refuse to or feel like you shouldn't have to because she isn't making you the maid of honor. Like, come on, man. Really?
It's not like she's choosing other people over you.
Right, exactly.
She's just like, this bridal party. First of all, like, She just saved you $500.
Exactly. You didn't have to buy the dress. You didn't have to pay for a bridal shower. You didn't have to do any of that stuff. Plan that stuff. No travel days, all this crap. Just write a speech. It's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Have the AI do it.
Literally, I've met 30 people in the last year that have had AI write either their vows or a speech, and it's generally gone all right. I know. It's ridiculous.
Hold on a minute. It's the same thing as in 1905 going to the library and reading through a book of vows and speeches and stealing.
In this case, you're just asking the internet to give you
the amalgamation of
2,000 books. Yeah,
that's right. The amalgamation and like the standard, like you wanted you to start stamping people out. Yeah. If this is the way you guys are going to
live. Holy cats,
come Give me all of humanity, mold it together, and spew out X. Like, do you not have an original thought? Oh, I guided it with my prompts.
Listen to me.
Stop it.
I would not do it. I'm just saying for the 30 people who
ben
have
Ben would
done
definitely
it.
Do it.
Yeah. Ben, we're two different people. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's undistinguishable because you both use AI as your outputs.
I'm saying I don't, but other people have, and it's been fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Google Gemini has married 45 people in the last 2 days, based on what you guys are saying.
All right. Do you have any additional advice, or what's Secular saying?
Secular's grossed out by you. In fact, she ran this one through the AI, she says. Okay, it says, your thoughts.
You're such a Neanderthal.
AI.
Don't you have any original thoughts to have and to hold that everyone has said a billion times?
I definitely did not say that.
You would have, though.
It's not about you, Pearl. Like, what did this become Mike's personal diary?
Because I'm better than you for not using AI
or anything that has been traditionally said.
Such a weird foot to stomp down on. Whatever.
Ephesians 5? No. Isn't there something original we can talk about in this marriage?
Secular says, what is your problem? Why would
that's
you
want? That's rough. If Secular starts out with "What's your problem?" I'll be honest with you.
Why would you want to do anything that would lessen your little sister's happiness on her special day? It appears you weren't joking after all when you said you were off the hook.
Heck yeah, Secular.
My thought is you should be honest with yourself about your motivations, then dismount from your high horse, write the darn speech, and make it heartfelt.
Holy crap! Yes.
Or you could have AI do it, and then it doesn't matter whether you know this person or not. Here's six random facts I know about somebody and a Bible verse I want to tie to. Spit me out something classy.
You just need to learn how to prompt it better.
You guys.
So I'm proud of Secular. I feel like that's the best advice Secular's given in a long time.
Holy cow.
Okay. All right.
Dear Life from the Path, how can I get my neighbor to stop buying us pies? Her husband died a year ago. He had Alzheimer's for many years before his passing. We are more than happy to help her with things around the house because we believe helping others is the right thing to do. We don't eat many sweets and don't want the excess calories. Health is a high priority. I've asked her to stop with the sweets, but she keeps buying us this stuff as a thank you. A verbal thanks would be enough.
Just be excited that she wants to give her the grace to be giving you something in return. And then give the pies to a food bank.
Wait a minute. Have they said, hey, I really love the thought here. But we're packing on the pounds. We can't eat all these pies.
Doesn't sound like they've gone that far.
I would say that.
Verbal thanks is enough.
Yeah, I would say, Joe, just say that.
Go for it.
Yeah, just take the pies. I'd throw them away.
I know you would. That's why I'm saying donate them.
I'd say thank you so
much. Find a church and go, can someone use this pie?
No one takes home-baked pies anymore.
It's not true.
Hey, I went to a fish fry at a church the other day. It was amazing.
It was an AI fish fry.
There was a booba there. There was like a half.
Oh, is that text you sent me? I was confused about
what was
happening.
There was like a half booba running through the fish fry line.
I didn't care enough about the fact that I had to have a conversation with you to respond to it.
This fish fry was amazing. Like AI the desserts
with Mike Fuster
were giant. They gave you a ton of fish and chicken if you wanted it. And there was the old people ate all the beans, which is fine because I didn't want none of the beans. But everything else was great. I love old church fish fries.
Well, I went to a fish fry a couple weeks ago. How much was this thing?
$13.
Yeah. Was it? Did you go to the one in Altoona?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I went to this thing.
Dallas Melcher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Melcher,
that
Dallas,
seems,
excuse me.
I'm going to go there. It wasn't good. First of all, everybody in that room is going to be dead in 20 years, for sure. And the dessert table was a free world donation. You had to pay an extra buck.
What?
To get desserts.
Nah, it's no good.
Yeah. And
what a wild thing to walk into a room and go, everybody in this room is going to be dead
in
20 years.
I did think that. I looked around and I thought, like, I've been to this one multiple years. Because with a...
I was going to say, I thought you'd go to one every year.
A relative of my wife's grandma. And so we go over there for her, and Like, I just, this means a lot to folks. Like, yeah. They put time into it and whatever. And, like, seriously, everyone's going to be dead in 20 years. Like, no one who really cares about this is going to be alive 20 years from now. Mm. And it's not great. Like, it's a bunch of canned green beans and, like, way overbaked potatoes.
Oh, this was not my experience.
Okay, I'm going to melt you down.
Yeah, this thing was hopping.
Can we go all together next year? This sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Live from the fish fry?
It has been, and we've been broadcasting, this will be 15 years this year.
Yeah.
And I believe in year one, maybe year two, we did a buffet. Though with Life from the Path went to the buffet.
Yes.
With Eisenhower was going to come.
Yeah.
And Pete Smith.
Did we go to the Chinese buffet?
Yeah. It was the big one over by Merle Hay. No.
And we went to Hibachi, didn't we?
Hibachi. That's what it was.
Hibachi on 86th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, we got to bring it back.
Anyways, fish fry was great.
Okay.
Second advice, right quick. Next time your well-meaning neighbor brings a pie to your home, remind her that you and your family avoid sweets for health reasons and a verbal thank you is more than enough. If she persists after that, tell her that instead of the pie, you would appreciate a fruit salad or a nice zucchini.
Yeah. Stab her in the thigh and say, this is what you're doing to me. Yeah.
Wait, she's taking orders? I'd like a lasagna.
Yeah.
And a zucchini
instead
salad.
Instead of these pies, Myrtle, maybe you could grow us some zooks.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
So we were at this fish fry, and we go outside. And
it's a story that never ends.
There's these people we know from town showed up and had their dog in their car. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, we're going to steal this dog. And so they left the window slightly down so the dog could breathe. And so we spent 30 minutes out in a parking lot trying to break into this van. And then some old junker shows up and he's like, hey, I have a pool cue in my car. he wanted to help because we'd constructed a couple straws together and then tried to stiffen it up at the joint so it could actually press the button. And it wasn't working. The whole thing was failing. And then Sanford and Son come right up, and he's like, hey, man, I got some stuff in my... He doesn't ask whether it's our van or not. He just assumes it is. And so my wife is like, yeah, we'll just go home and get the keys. Trying to play it off as if it's our van. I'm like, you straight lied to that man, woman. She's like, yeah, I did.
Are we just going to, like, skate past the fact that you were actively trying to steal a person's dog for 30 minutes?
I mean, we were going to tell him.
Yeah.
We were going to tell him we stole it. We were taking it home, let it run around the property a little bit, let it have a good time.
It just seems wild to be like, this was a legitimate effort of you and your family to basically steal someone's dog.
Yeah, there were seven people in that van. We brought the whole neighborhood, and then we're like, we got to get this dog in here, though. You guys have to scoot over. So we made plans to get the dog, but it never came to fruition. Then we had to leave in defeat, so that part was pretty sad.
Again, was this someone you know's dog?
Yeah.
Okay, I must have missed that part.
You said someone from town.
I heard someone from town. I didn't hear someone that I know. I thought you were just saying I was in town and I tried to steal someone's dog. That is what I was operating under.
No, that would be wrong.
Agreed. It's a little bit better that it was someone you know's.
But that junk shop was definitely going to help us break into this car without having any proof that it was actually our car.
Yeah.
If you have ever tried to steal a dog, or have ever had a desire to steal a dog, and you would like to tell us about the experience, you should hit us up on the Live for Path Complaint Line.
Yeah, I agree. 515-517-0085. Call or text. Dear Live from the Path, I stole a dog. Here's my confession.
Tried to steal a dog.
#Mike, I stole a dog.
Attempted. You notice I did not repent of that. I'm still fine with it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Change your ways, Mike.
#FlossOpsu. In my van. No, all caps.
Let's end this.
You're listening to Life in the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. I don't know how the days and weeks will go. I thought we would do more shows, but maybe that's a blessing to you. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Death's at the door. And if we ever start wondering if you've left us alone, we'll find graves into gardens and then